Now it's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation.
What are you people? On dope?
Or you can toke.
I inhale.
Or you can talk.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
Or you can toke and talk.
10 federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
While we talk about toke on Toker Talk Radio.
So by the way, when it comes to pot, you know, if you're 40 years old, you live in a log cabin in Oregon, you got 12 giant pot plants in your backyard, have a ball.
Live from beautiful Portland, Oregon at Rolla J Studios.
Hey, this is great.
Freedom. Yes, freedom. Cannabis.
Plus your calls live at 971-533-7111.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Gateway theory doesn't work. It's a reality.
Holland, is it real? Don't tease me.
We're locking up people that take a couple of puffs of marijuana, and the next thing you know, they got 10 years.
And now, here's your host, the guru of ganja graphics, the sultan of sativa statistics, and the worst nightmare of a reefer mad prohibitionist. A polite, perspicacious, productive pothead with a propensity for PowerPoint. Radical Russ Belleville.
All right, welcome back, everyone. Hour two, Toker Talk Radio on the air. Phone line is 971-533-7111. Hanging out here for our last few shows in this Rolla J Studios. We'll be hitting the road in 2016, trying to legalize marijuana nationwide in what I call the fill-in-the-back tour, otherwise known as the Legalize America tour. I was just talking about my support for legalization and my view that this is a war on drugs. This is a war, and as such, we should fight it like it's a war. And people that give aid and comfort to the enemy in the war should be called out for doing so. And I have, and it's not always made me popular. In fact, I was really unpopular, even with a lot of people. I'm telling you, folks, friends I've had for 5-10 years in this movement who've strongly supported everything I've ever done hated my support of Ohio Issue 3. Hated it. And I understand why they did. Totally understand why they did. And I hope we're still friends. I still like them, and I hope they still like me. But I hope they understand where I'm coming from. For me, there's five things I'm looking for in my legalization. Can I smoke it? Can I buy it? Can I grow it? Can I sell it? And can I be free from discrimination? Those are the five things I want in legalization. Now, that's what I want in legalization. As the Stones once sang, you can't always get what you want, but if you try sometime, you just might find you get what you need. For me, it's a hierarchical list. And none of those things, not having some of those things, is not a deal breaker to me. The number one thing is, can I smoke it? It's got to have that. If it doesn't have can I smoke it, the rest of them are useless anyway, right? So if it's got can I smoke it in it, I'm voting for it. Can I smoke it? I'm voting for it. So every legalization that has been on the ballot so far in my career here, there have been 13 of them since 2000, would allow me to possess and smoke marijuana. Then I'm for it. It ends cops' ability to mess with me over the smell of weed. It ends cops' ability to arrest me, to take my stuff, to shoot my dog. All right, that's what I need. Can I smoke it? Which necessarily means, can I possess it, right? I like to say, can I smoke it, though, because can I possess? It's like, well, why would you possess unless you were going to consume it, right? And you could say consume rather than smoke if you're a vapor or whatever. But, you know, you get my point. Can I use marijuana? Now, if you look at I-502, which I will say, I-502 is the worst legalization in America so far. It's what happens when you get drinkers who write a marijuana legalization and then get an alcohol expert to consult on it and then have it run by a liquor board. So, yeah, I-502 is the worst legalization there is. But it's a million times better than the best prohibition in any other state. Because I can go into Washington State have weed on me and not be harassed, go into a store and buy it. So it's got two of my three. It's got, can I smoke it? It's got, can I buy it? That's great. It's got two out of the three. I'm willing to vote for what it's got. One, can I smoke it? But now it's got two. Can I smoke it? Can I buy it? It'd be better if it had, can I grow it? And it has, can I sell it? If I go get a license, I can sell it. So it's got three of my five. And number five, can I live my life free of discrimination? Well, it actually increased some discrimination by creating that per se DUID. That actually created, that added to discrimination. So we're going to have to take one of the three away. They cancel out, right? So the can I sell it is canceled out by the discrimination one. So I'm getting two out of my five, so I'm still going to vote for it. Because it takes away that ability for cops to fuck with people. And I'm not opining. This is the fact. All marijuana charges dropped 63% in the state of Washington, even without home grow. That means a whole bunch of people that were growing didn't get busted because just an ounce of possession was legal. Now, this is the part where people will chime in and say, but the medical marijuana, oh my God, they're shutting down medical marijuana. It's awful. The sky is falling with medical marijuana. Oh my God. No, what's happening here is two things that they interface each other, but they're two separate. They are two things. One is legalizing marijuana. The other is regulating medical marijuana. And Washington State never got around to doing that part, the regulating medical marijuana part. And people on the medical marijuana side that want to bring up, oh my God, I-502 is causing this and that to happen, should at least own up to the shenanigans that were going on in Washington State that led up to the legislature not trusting or believing medical marijuana as being something legit and needing or feeling they needed to regulate it or over-regulate it or over-restrict it, whatever you want to call it. Let's not forget, this is the place where the medical marijuana community was all against having some sort of state registry. Can't have a state registry. That's like sex offenders, which it isn't. But state, got to have a state registry. And yet, they couldn't see how that was being abused. They wouldn't own up to how that was being abused by all these different clinics that were handing out paper to just about anybody who'd pay for it. You can't deny the naturopaths in a tent at the Seattle Hemp Fest who are handing out recommendations on pieces of paper to lines of eager 20-something skate punks who are ready to get high before the Cottonmouth Kings concert. Those things have an effect. And they have the effect of eroding any sort of trust you had from your public officials. So don't blame it all on I-502. Take some responsibility for understanding Washington's medical marijuana clusterfuck, which was encouraged to continue by a lot of people in Washington's medical marijuana industry, had a lot to do with it. And another thing that had a lot to do with it, these medical marijuana people who were making money hand over fist in a quasi-regulated situation, not putting their money toward a better legalization to get on the ballot. There were guys trying for a long time in Washington State to get better legalizations on the ballot. Where were all those 5- and 6-figure donations from these medical marijuana millionaires coming in? Those didn't materialize, did they? Politics ain't beanbag. I'd rather be strongly right than meekly wrong. Strongly wrong than meekly right, excuse me. And there may be times where I'm strongly wrong, but I'm going to go down strongly defending my point of view. All right, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, another discussion I got into earlier today on Twitter with Stoner Jesus that leads me to discussing the absurd libertarian taxation is theft argument. Ugh.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Ganjapreneur.com, your guide to the cannabis business world. Ganjapreneur.com is a comprehensive resource for cannabis professionals and entrepreneurs. Download the Ganjapreneur app on your smartphone or tablet to catch up on cannabis industry news, scroll through our daily job listings, and learn about successful cannabis companies, executives, and investors. Ganjapreneur.com, helping Ganjapreneurs grow.
The Russ Belville Show. We're as much like Cheech and Chong as ordinary Americans are like the Three Stooges. Hey, Mo!
The smoke is rising, and the next crop of podcasts devoted to cannabis providers and enthusiasts are ready to be harvested.
Welcome to the Cannabis Radio Network,
founded by respected rainmakers who have been producing award-winning podcasts for over a decade. Industry headlines, business updates, medical reports, marketing, and e-commerce education rolled up perfectly for your consumption. Let's grow together.
The Cannabis Radio Network. CannabisRadio.com.
Imagine life without taxes. Let New Era Certified Public Accountants, NewEraCPAs.com, handle your cannabis 280E and tax strategy. Get your business prepared with New Era CPAs Cannabis Finance Bootcamp. NewEraCPAs.com, with years of experience in the industry, we are one of the nation's leading accounting firms for growers, dispensaries, and ancillary companies from Washington to California. NewEraCPAs.com.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation, only on CannabisRadio.com.
Thank you, Dan Michaels. And I want to talk a little bit off the warpath here, but it's not too far off the warpath because it's something that comes up in discussions about marijuana. That is the idea of taxes. And oftentimes in the marijuana movement, we deal with a lot of people who are of the libertarian bent. And so it's a common libertarian refrain to say, taxation is theft. Taxation is the government taking my money by threat of force. By the barrel of a gun, they're thieves taking my money. And so I wanted to talk about that because one thing that always cracks me up about that is oftentimes I end up in this argument with people who are diehard Second Amendment supporters. We're talking the open carry types, right? By God, Congress there shall not be infringed. The right to bear arms shall not be infringed. No infringement. You're infringing. Don't you go fringing. Shall not be infringed. Second Amendment, absolute right. Gotta have guns. Gotta have guns everywhere. Anywhere I want a gun, I can have a gun. I should have any gun I want because, God damn it, the Constitution says so. It's right there in the Constitution. Shall not be infringed. So the people that give me that are the same ones that give me that taxation is theft. Taxation is theft by the government. The government's thieving. They're taking money. Well, wait a minute. Isn't that the 16th Amendment? 16th Amendment says Congress shall be given the power to appropriate taxes on income. So we love us the Second Amendment, but we don't love us the 16th Amendment. We get to just pick and choose. Like the Constitution's now an a la carte menu, right? We can pick and choose which ones we like. So I was inspired by this on my Twitter account today. And if you want to go back and read the timeline, you can. Me and Stoner Jesus got into a long old discussion about this. And here's my issue with the people that say the taxation is theft. See, you come in, and one of his complaints was, oh, I didn't vote for the 16th Amendment. I didn't vote for taxation. Well, okay. Well, by that measure, you didn't vote for free speech, the right to bear arms, and freeing the slaves either, right? I mean, come on. At some point, don't we have to accept that as citizens, you know, part of getting this great thing called birthright citizenship in this country is the exchange for the fact that being a birthright citizen means we have this Constitution. And under this Constitution, there are these amendments and these bills and laws, and they apply to all of us because we're all citizens, right? But no, this idea that taxation is theft is centered on this really selfish idea that by God, I'm a self-made independent island of a man. I come in here and I make money, and then the government takes it. Why? The government's just stealing my money.
Well, first of all, let's talk about the concept of money. You're not getting paid in chickens. You're not getting paid in lumber, right? You're getting paid in a currency. And a currency can only exist with a government to enforce it. Really, it can only exist with a government. It's right there on the bills and coins, you know, that it's part of the government. The government makes that exist. Without it, we'd have to pay each other in barter. And we all found that barter was not quite as an efficient system. So as a society, we agreed that we would set value on this thing called currency and use it to trade with one another. The fact that that exists, and the banking and the Federal Reserve and all of this, the deposit insurance and all of these governmental things that have to exist, the SEC, the stock markets, all these things that have to exist to enable this sort of currency-based economy to exist are because of the government. It's not your money. It's our money. It's our society's money. Society created this concept called money, and for it to exist, we have to have a government. And for the government to exist, it has to be funded. And as a society, we passed an amendment that figured out how to fund it through the taxation on income. So that's the first part. And the second thought is about what your income is and how you were able to get this income. If you are making an income, not only did you have a government that supported the currency that makes it possible to pay you, but a government that creates and maintains the roads that you drove on to get to work and created the safety standards for the car that you're in so that you didn't die on the way there or pollute or punish the people around you to some extent. And we have the food that you ate to nourish your body while you were working, that food was not poisonous or spoiled because we had governmental agencies that were making sure that it was tested and guaranteed. And you have, some of you might work with other people or have to have assistance or something. And those people all have educations. They're all able to add and subtract and basically read and write. That didn't come out of nowhere. They came from public schools, people that went to school to be and universities to be able to learn these things. And a lot of you, like me, you're working on the internet, something that was DARPA. It was the U.S. government's Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. The government, the Department of Energy, put that together. So these people that say, well, I made the income and the government came and take. No, you started with a whole bunch of government resources to be able to make that income. And now you were asked, the rest of us are asking you to pay it a little back so that government and that society can continue for the next batch of birthright citizens who show up to be able to also make incomes. Now, if you don't like paying the taxes, this is the other thing they say, well, it's mandatory. You're forced. You absolutely must pay taxes. No, you don't. You don't have to pay taxes. Be homeless. Be a homeless guy. Homeless guys aren't paying taxes. Or renounce your citizenship and move out of the country. Because really, you don't expect to be able to sit in here and not pay taxes and then get the benefits of all the stuff the rest of us are paying taxes for. Is that your argument? You're going to be a free rider, freeloader on our society? No, we're all paying the taxes, so you're going to pay your fair share too. Or you can get the hell out of the country and go live in land of sovereign property land, wherever the hell that is, Cayman Islands, I don't know, where, Dubai, wherever it is you want to live and not pay taxes, I don't know where that's at. But we all agreed through our Constitution, we came up with an amendment. If you're going to sit here and defend the Second Amendment as being sacrosanct, or like a lot of us in the drug war, defend the Fourth Amendment or the Fifth Amendment as sacrosanct, or states' rights, 10th Amendment, sacrosanct, then by God, the 16th Amendment, sacrosanct. We all decided as a society we were going to tax each other's incomes in order to fund our society. Now, we can argue about how much that tax is, that it should be a lot lower for us poor people, a lot higher on the corporations, distributed differently, spent differently, collected differently, sure. But the idea that there's not going to be tax, get real. Further
furthermore, these people aren't always against taxes. They say, well, sales tax would be okay. We could have a sales tax. Well, what's a sales tax? The government taking your money by theft because you decided to enter into an economic transaction with someone. happy 420, everyone. I need to get a little more high.
Hurry, its temperature is shooting past 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit. It's burning up.
I'm afraid for this little guy, it's just too late.
What caused the problem?
Only Dr. Dabber can maintain the perfect temperature for a smooth-tasting, slower burn. This standard vaporizer lost all of its health benefits, sending it up in smoke.
So you're telling me that most vapor pens burn so hot they produce smoke, not vapor?
Correct. Keep away from those standard vaporizer pens and turn to Dr. Dabber. Doctor's orders.
Less heat, more flavor.
Get the latest updates on the Russ Belville Show by following Radical Russ on Twitter and liking the Russ Belville Show on Facebook.
It's time for Cannabis Facts About Alzheimer's from Robert Platschorn's thesilvertour.org. This message is supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. A new Florida study in the journal Molecular and Cellular Neuroscience found that cannabis promotes the growth of healthy new brain tissue. It can slow the effects of Alzheimer's and may, in fact, be able to halt it entirely. A long-term study by Ohio State University's Professor Gary Wenk concludes that people who regularly use marijuana get Alzheimer's at a much lower rate than others. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com.
The Russ Belville Show is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association in the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com, and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
Remember, friends, there's more to life than marijuana. I just can't remember what it is. Why'd I come in here? You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation, only on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everybody. Talking about legalized marijuana here on the Russ Belville Show. We got a couple of stories that highlight how we still have a long way to go. You know, maybe a lot of people in the South or the Midwest are like, oh, man, Colorado, Washington State, you got legal weed. Everything's good. Okay, so, yeah, everything is good, but it could be better. It could be better. And there's a story coming off KIRO-TV about how there's a new bill in the Washington State legislature to create a pilot program for marijuana home delivery service. Now, they already have home delivery services, but they're all operating illegally right now. And one thing Washington has shown is they don't want to leave any tax money on the table, right? If someone's out there doing it illegally, they want to find a way to undercut that and bring it into the legal market. So this pilot program, they'd allow five of the existing I-502 marijuana stores to offer delivery services. This is all be in Seattle, five stores in Seattle. It would have a delivery requirements, employee training, and so forth. And according to Seattle Mayor Ed Murray, he says, quote, "We must address illegal delivery services that are undermining I-502 and allow responsible business to offer delivery service in Seattle. The proposed pilot delivery program, along with increased enforcement of existing marijuana laws, will better protect consumers or customers, patients, and business owners while strengthening the legal marijuana industry." There have been 19 legal pot stores have opened in Seattle since I-502, but the number of illegal delivery services are up to 24. So you got 19 stores trying to follow the rules, trying to follow the law, and again,
no argument for me that it's been a pretty awful rollout with I-502. But here you got 19 good actors trying to follow the law, and what, you're going to get 24 of these guys, once again, skirting the rules, skirting the law, to illegally deliver weed. And it's just something, you know, I understand how people want to get the jump and they want to do these things and they feel it should be, you know, they want to find these loopholes and stuff, push the envelope, as it were. And you could argue that it's a good thing they did. Because if these guys hadn't been illegally offering delivery, would there have been as much pressure then to try to come up with this legal pilot delivery program? Probably not. But I don't think the guys doing the illegal deliveries were doing it out of some sort of civil disobedience to get the law changed. In fact, I'll bet these are the guys that are going to scream the most about this pilot program, as it'll be something that will be competing with them. And this is something that troubles me as we move forward in legalization, right? Because when marijuana was illegal, there's a certain aspect to doing illegal things to protest it, right? Smoke-ins and that kind of stuff. But now that it's legal, there's a certain pressure to show that, yes, indeed, you can trust us, that we will follow rules. And it makes the idea of doing like smoke-ins and delivery services illegally and, you know, cannabis cafes and clubs trying to find, you know, loopholes. And it does open up, you know, how much of that, you know, how far can you go with that and still retain the public's goodwill? How much of that will be blowback of, see, we gave them an inch, they're taking a mile. We tried to come up with some reasonable regulations and they wouldn't follow them. So we're going to have to try to figure that out and where the balance is. I'm hopeful that this pilot program does well and that we have marijuana delivery services. Of course, marijuana should be like any other product. We should be able to buy it, sell it, deliver it. I mean, what's the argument against a marijuana delivery service? What's the argument against that, right? In fact, there should be an argument for it. And aside from just the medical patient argument, right? I try to keep these discussions about legalization about everybody, right? But obviously there's the medical patient argument. This guy's infirm. He has no transportation. You should be able to deliver to him. Sure. But I'm just talking the convenience of it. And I'm also, you know, the public health aspect of it. You could make the argument that the guy who's going out to drive somewhere to get the weed might find some place to use the weed and then continue driving. Now, I know that marijuana drivers aren't a problem, especially those of us who have tolerance and who've been doing it for a long time. We're not a problem. Again, talking perception, right? The perception would be, if you want to make the perception argument, someone driving to the pot store and getting their pot is more dangerous than taking the pot to them at their house. By their rules, by the rules of the prohibitionists that fear the stone driver, right? Well, if you're so afraid of stone drivers, why won't you let sober ones take weed to people, right? So I don't even know what the argument is against a weed delivery service. It makes no sense to me. In fact, I would think that your average pot-hating city council would legalize weed delivery services and put bans on storefronts. I'm trying to think from their point of view, right? Their point of view is weed is evil and it shouldn't be seen by the children. Well, if there were no storefronts and instead all weed was delivery weed, wouldn't that suffice? You wouldn't have pot shops, you wouldn't see them, right? I'm not arguing for that, by the way. I'm just saying from their point of view, wouldn't that make at least consistently logical sense? But no, there's nothing consistently logical about these people. I should quit trying to find it. The other issue going on in the legal marijuana state, of course, is marijuana events, marijuana public usage, right? And this is going on in Colorado. A state lawmaker in Colorado, Representative Dominic Moreno, is trying to create a new kind of license to allow pot to be lawfully sold and consumed on site at special events only open to people over 21. He says, quote, Amendment 64 asked us to regulate marijuana like alcohol. This bill creates the exact same special use permit process that we already have for alcohol. Now, of course, public consumption is illegal in all the legal states right now. Yes, you can have your marijuana, but by God, we better not see it. Better keep it secret. Better keep it hidden. Because if someone saw the marijuana, something bad would happen. I don't know. Anyway, it's illegal, right? So the thing is, pot's a social drug, right? We're not legalizing heroin. If you legalized heroin and you know, everyone was going to take it at home and just use it by themselves, right? That's a different argument. But pot is the very definition of social drug. I've never seen anyone in a beer circle passing a stein of beer around and everyone taking a sip. I've never seen that. Joint circles, yeah. Two or three joints being passed around, absolutely. So, of course, we need a place to be able to publicly consume marijuana. And if you're going to treat marijuana like alcohol, then we should have a place to be able to use it. And what they're suggesting here is something that is even more strict than the alcohol thing. He's saying only at events subject to local government approval to run 9 a.m. to midnight at events that can only be events that are only open to people over 21. Now, I would actually, you know, I'd support that, but I'd point out that there's beer gardens and patio beer drinking at all sorts of places where kids are allowed in. It speaks to this cannabis bigotry, this cannabigotry that we all face, that, oh my God, you're such a reprehensible drug addict, we cannot bear to lay eyes on you. But we can have a beer at the Applebee's with the kids sitting there, no problem. Hell, we can get shots, no problem. Because if the kids saw us drinking, why, we're just drinking. That's just something adults do. It's not as if they're drug addicts smoking pot. Disgusting. I really hope that this starts to sink in culture, that people start to understand this. And I think it is. I think, you know, now that we're getting, you know, Chuck Lorre is shopping a pot shop sitcom, pot's just going to become passe. I see it in TV shows and I see it in movies where it's pot smoking's happening, but it's not mentioned. It's not talked about. It's just nothing. It's just like part of the scenery. Just like someone smoking a cigarette or drinking a beer, right? Like when you see someone in a movie smoking a cigarette, the movie's not about Bob the cigarette smoker, Bob and Tom and their cigarette adventure. No, it's just this is a character who smokes cigarettes. Same with booze. I mean, yeah, there's some movies about alcoholism and stuff, but most of the time, booze in a movie is just sometimes it's a plot device. The characters are getting drunk, like Hangover or whatever. But oftentimes, the movie is just, you know, character had a drink, has a glass of wine. Marijuana's getting there. Marijuana's getting to the place now where, oh, that character's smoking a joint. No big deal. And the more that happens, then the more these special event licenses and public consumption will be palatable to the general public. Just like, you know, Will and Grace made, and Ellen made gay marriage more palatable to the general public. It becomes something that's mundane. It's just average. It's normal. It's no big deal. But we're not there yet. And this thing in Colorado with, oh my God, we legalized pot, but should we give people a place to smoke it? Oh, gee, I don't know. Maybe if there's no kids there, and only if the state local government can say no, because, you know, some places they don't want to see the pot smokers. Oh, dear. It's just infuriating sometimes, isn't it? Because this kind of bigotry, and that's what it is. It's bigotry. You can't explain it in any other way. This kind of bigotry would be so glaringly obvious if we were talking about gay people or Jewish people or females or transgender or little people or the obese or maybe not the obese. They still get picked on pretty bad too. But you know what I mean? If should we have
I don't know, you know, sugars and trans fats, gosh, oh, those are bad. We, you know, we don't want our kids to get fat. We can't have that, you know, chocolate and cake, you know, convention. Oh, maybe if only people over 21 are allowed in it, because, you know, if the kids saw a bunch of obese people, they might think that, you know, sugar and fats are okay to use. And then it'd be bad for the public health. And our kids might grow up to be fatties. And, oh, can you imagine the outrage for something like that? And God forbid we start talking about, you know, black folks or gay folks, anything like that as well, man. We, you know, they come in to shut me down. It's amazing to me how people can't uncover the bigotry of it. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that alcohol has its own vocabulary. You're not high, you're buzzed. You're not overdosed, you're drunk, you know. It has its own vocabulary. But just our whole culture can't even see the dichotomy, the disparity between how we treat people who use alcohol, the hardest drug out there, and how we treat people who use marijuana, the softest drug out there. And to fail to realize, they're both drugs. We'll be right back. Stick around.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Great websites today need expert web design and development and need to be e-commerce ready and mobile friendly. But building a marketable and profitable website can be an uphill climb. Ready to make your new website or replace your existing website? Think Orange as the new way to get in the black. Orange Hill Development works with Fortune 500 companies and offer the same top quality development service at a fraction of what other providers charge. Brands like Absolut, Carlsberg, and Nestlé trust Orange Hill Development. Find out why you should trust your website with Orange Hill. Contact Orange Hill for a consultation today at orangehilldevelopment.com.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
I do not like them, Sam. I am. I do not like green eggs and ham.
Okay. Maybe you're high, too.
Cannabis Confidential with Dr. Dina. Candid.
I want to give you the inside story.
Captivating.
I want to introduce you to my kind and amazingly talented friends.
Compelling.
We get to meet some of the most amazing cannabis activists and warriors around.
Listen in as medical marijuana pioneer Dr. Dina shares never-before-heard stories, chats with cannabis insiders and celebrity friends, and provides invaluable perspective and insight into one of the fastest-growing industries in the world.
I want to share with you what was once confidential information. Let's expose the truth, discuss the issues, and learn the facts.
Cannabis Confidential, only on CannabisRadio.com.
Hey everybody, it's Radical Russ here from 420 Radio, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
Warning, hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that. This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everyone. 39 after the hour. Having a little fun here reading Think Progress, which points out Ursula K. Le Guin. Does that name sound familiar to you? She's the world-renowned science fiction author. She won the Hugo and Nebula Awards. She wrote A Wizard of Earthsea, The Left Hand of Darkness, and The Dispossessed, among many, many books that Ursula K. Le Guin has written. One of science fiction's greatest authors lives right up here in Northwest Portland. And she wrote a letter to the editor regarding the Bundy standoff, the Bundy militia out there in Malheur County, you know, Y'al-Qaeda. You know, vanilla ISIS out there that has taken the Malheur refuge out there. And she wrote a really good letter to the editor, a little op-ed here about the Bundys. And it kind of dovetails in with what I was talking about earlier about Second Amendment people and the Constitution and the 16th Amendment with income taxes and people who think the Constitution's an a la carte menu and they just get to pick and choose the parts they want, you know, kind of like they do their Bible. So the piece goes, it's really short. The Oregonian's headline on Sunday, January 17th, "Effort to Free Federal Lands," is inaccurate and irresponsible. The article that follows it is a mere mouthpiece for the scofflaws illegally occupying public buildings and land, repeating their lies and distortions of history and law. Ammon Bundy and his bully boys aren't trying to free federal lands, but to hold them hostage. I can't go to the Malheur Refuge now, though as a citizen of the United States, I own it and have the freedom of it. That's what public land is, land that belongs to the public. Me, you, every law-abiding American. The people it doesn't belong to and who don't belong there are those who grabbed it by force of arms, flaunting their contempt for the local citizens. Those citizens of Harney County have carefully hammered out agreements to manage the refuge in the best interest of landowners, scientists, visitors, tourists, livestock, and wildlife. They're suffering more every day, economically and otherwise, from this invasion by outsiders. Instead of parroting the meaningless rants of a flock of right-winged loony birds infesting the refuge, why doesn't the Oregonian talk to the people who live there? That's Ursula K. Le Guin writing in the Oregonian. The cost of the occupation is estimated to be $133,000 a day. Been out there for 18 days. And Le Guin, in an email to Think Progress, said, quote, "They should make it clear, by words first, then by deliberate actions, that ranting about the Constitution does not get you a permit to break the law, fail to pay your grazing fees, cut a rancher's fences, steal government cars, misuse public property, and keep a lot of good American citizens under a stupid, brutal reign of terror now for 18 days. How much longer? Enough is enough." End quote. And I worry about this because we've got a lot of people who are very upset and angry, and a lot of them in our movement, and rightfully so, considering the way the government has broken down doors and so forth. Putting people in jail and shooting their pets and killing patients and just the terrible shit that's gone on. And then that leads to this feeling that the government itself, the very idea of having government, is evil. Because the government in certain ways has done certain evil things, the whole idea and concept of government is evil and needs to be gotten rid of. That's where those anarchist types come up, right? To me, the problem with our government isn't our government. It's us as the citizens failing to live up to our responsibility to maintain and watch over that government. Mostly through our votes. Now, we can complain about the influence of big money, you know, Citizens United, the right-wing billionaires, the left-wing billionaires. They can buy this, they can buy that. And that's a righteous complaint. Nothing wrong with that complaint. On the other hand, when our voter turnout is hovering in the... What's our latest voter turnout? 60%? U.S. voter turnout 2012. Let's go with the last, you know, presidential election. Voting turnout in the U.S. presidential election went down from 62.3% of eligible citizens in 2008 to 57.5% in 2012. It was 54.2% in the 2000 election. So it's actually gone up a little. When we can't even get 60% of our citizens to vote, what did you expect was going to happen to government? You gave more power disproportionately to the people who do vote and those guys with the money to be able to buy more of those votes. Now, there's all sorts of structural things wrong with our government that need to be fixed. I think we need to abolish the Electoral College. I think we need to institute range voting. I think we need to take money out of politics. All sorts of things that, I mean, I'm not
Pollyanna here. I mean, there's all sorts of things that are wrong with our government. But there's nothing wrong with government. The whole concept of people in a democratic or republican fashion, and I mean in the small case terms, small letter, Democrat and Republican, ways of organizing our resources to benefit the general welfare. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with our government that more participation in it wouldn't fix. I really strongly believe that. And I see, I'm hopeful, I see signs that we're headed that direction. But I'm telling you, 57%, 57.5% voter turnout, not going to cut it. We need to do more to get involved in our government. We need to fight more for our right to vote and see that it is. Now, I've heard some interesting ideas about this. In Australia, voting is compulsory. You have to vote. I'm not for that. I'm not for compulsory voting because to me that is government forcing me to have an opinion. And that violates my First Amendment rights to believe whatever the hell I want to believe, right? And to say or not say whatever I want to say or not say. So no, I'm not for compulsory voting. Although Australia, it seems to be working great for them. Another idea, and I saw this on The Daily Show the other night, was allow betting on voting. Like allow betting on the presidential race, congressional races and all that, because they've shown it in some countries that do it. It increases voter turnout and increases voter knowledge. They actually had this, they took like six guys who were totally into fantasy football and didn't know jack shit about politics, and then set up an experiment. And I don't know, this wasn't scientific. It was on The Daily Show, right? But they set it up where these guys would be betting on the presidential election. And when they came back after two, three hours of study, these guys had politics down. they knew the inside, you know, just like the fantasy football guys. Oh, well, this receiver, he's playing against a defensive back over 6 foot tall on grass in the rain, and his catch percentage drops by 13%. They know that level of statistics. They got that detailed into the presidential politics. Well, Hispanics are going to turn out this way. And they sounded like they're on Meet the Press, man. So, you know, should betting be allowed on our elections? I don't see why not. Right? I'm generally for people being able to spend their money on stuff. Right? As long, you know, other people want to spend money with them, and we're all consenting adults that want to spend our money this way. I don't see why not. But I'll tell you what would really help voting in this country. Make it easier to vote. First of all, what's up with this, you know, having to register to vote? What kind of, you know, buggy whip stagecoach anachronism is this? We've got a whole generation of kids who've grown up with 15 seasons of American Idol, where you could vote by text, you could vote by call, you could vote online. And you're going to tell them, well, you need to go down to this government kind of library-ish office that you never ever go to, and you need to fill out this form to tell them where you live, and you need to do that a certain number of days before, and then when it comes time to vote, you need to go to this other library-ish, government-ish building, and then go punch a hole in a card or fill in a bubble on a piece of paper to be able to vote for president, because it's really important. Everybody should do it. It's really, really important, but we're going to make it a real pain in the ass to do. And people say, oh, well, we can't have electronic voter registration or electronic voting. It could be hacked. Yeah, so could ATMs. Why is it that people that have ATM cards and use ATMs and debit cards for transactions day after day after day after day aren't terrified that their money's going to be stolen any minute by a hacker? That any minute now, one of their little debit card transactions isn't going to work, even though they have money, because there's been an electronic glitch in the system? Or some sort of sabotage or terrorism, or infiltration, or somebody trying to cook the books. Why is there no fear about that in our ATM system? Why? Because it's encrypted, because there's checks and balances, because there's money at stake, right? People trust that system. Works
damn near perfectly. Now there are glitches. There's the 0.00001 type, you know, percent glitches that will happen in any system anywhere. Nothing's foolproof. But by and large, 99.99999% of us use our ATM card every day, debit card every day. Works just fine. We never have a problem with it. So why do we fear electronic voting? Well, obviously, we have the mind, the brain power and the technology to come up with secure systems, secure redundant systems. Why not do it for voting? Now, I understand the concerns about electronic voting machines and flipping votes and the shenanigans that go on that way. And yeah, we could worry about someone hacking an election. But my God, if we can come up with an ATM system to deal with trillions of dollars of currency, we can come up with a system to handle a few million votes, 100 million votes, for various elections. Make voting easier. If people could vote with an app on their cell phone, we would have 80-90% voter turnout. They could vote online, not have to. And the registration thing, wasn't it? The voter registration. Well, we want to make sure you're not having 1,000 people go from your city to some other state to vote for something and flood the polls or whatever. Okay, I understand you want voter registration. We have all sorts of ways of verifying people's address now. I know when all sorts of things allow me to bring in a utility bill to prove I live somewhere, right? You should be able to register to vote on the same day you're voting. Even if it's electronic, I mean, the apps now, Weed Maps knows where I live, right? How can this not be figured out? I refuse to accept any of these excuses. And furthermore, other ways to get more votes? How about we make Election Day a holiday and put it on the weekend or give people an entire week to vote? Hell, here in Oregon, we do completely vote by mail. You get a voter guide mailed to you, you fill out your bubble sheet, you mail in your ballot. You got weeks and weeks to do it. And our voter turnout turns out better than most everyone's, but it still isn't in the 90s or anything because you got to fill out a piece of paper and you got to put a stamp on it in the envelope and get it in the thing. Yeah. Electronic voting. Automatic voter registration, same day voter registration, motor voter, you get your driver's license, you're automatically registered. You register for the draft, you're automatically registered. Whatever it is, let's get more voting happening and you'll see government turn out a whole lot better.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
The next generation of vaporizers has arrived. Vuber vaporizers are blazing the way with unparalleled technology for oil, concentrate, or dry flower pens. Providing unsurpassed customer service and expert craftsmanship, Vuber vaporizers use cutting-edge technology, providing a power-packed, smoother vapor with a lifetime guarantee. Experience vaporizing the way it was meant to be. The Vuber way.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
And if standing for the Constitution make you a wacko bird, then I am a very, very proud wacko bird.
Okay. Maybe you're high, too.
At midnight, July 1st, 2015, adult marijuana prohibition came to an end in Oregon. Immediately, over 400,000 adults who consume cannabis responsibly were no longer criminals. This is what freedom sounds like. Brought to you by Portland Normal.
The Fingerboard Extension has fretted instruments to enhance your creativity. It has new and used guitars and banjos from beginning to high class. The Fingerboard Extension has National Resophonic, Husson Dalton, Larrabee, Heritage and Recording King guitars, and Mike Ramsey Wildwood Gold Tone and Recording King banjos. The The Fingerboard Extension also has drum stuff, used gear, and parts. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension, downtown Corvallis, Oregon at 120 Northwest 2nd, or check out the inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com and reverb.com.
Yar, thar be pirates here. Har, 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 har,
you're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation, only on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everybody. Reminder, coming up at the top of the hour, Stoner Jesus will be joining you. Hallowed be thy name. It's completely not safe for work, but completely recommended for laughing. Stoner Jesus coming up next, top of the hour, 5 o'clock Pacific, 8 o'clock Eastern Time, here on CannabisRadio.com. I'm Radical Russ, and I got a piece up in Huffington Post in politics section that is entitled, Hillary's Detractors Are Sexist, We Need a Woman President. And I'm getting people, it's interesting because you get to find out how many people just read the title and then comment without reading the article. Because what happened is when I submitted this blog post, it was Hillary's detractors are sexist / we need a woman president. The whole point of the article is you can't complain about the sexist attacks on Hillary Clinton and then at the same time say we need a woman president, because that's sexist too. That's sexism to say that we need a woman president, as if her genitalia, her haircut, her clothing, her, you know, make a difference. Right. So that's what the article was about. And a lot of people didn't get that. And they started attacking me like, oh, Hillary's this, Hillary's that. And I was like, no, I agree with you. That's the point. And nice to see the comments that were coming up, and nice to see people responding to that. But again, a lot of people just not reading the entire thing. Also, coming up on tomorrow's show, we've got some guests joining us. Gregory Fry and Max Simon will be joining us to talk about the Cannabis Health Summit. I think this is an online thing they're doing, so I'm quite interested to hear about that. And coming up on Friday, Stephanie Bishop may be joining us to discuss the United Nations and mass incarceration. And there's a new economic impact study for the Emerald Triangle. So Stephanie's longtime activist who calls into the show from time to time. We'll get her on Friday and give you the updates on that stuff. And by the way, if you have any suggestions as to people I ought to be interviewing or people you want to hear from here on the Russ Belville Show, make sure you let me know. You can send me an email. You can always get in touch with me. I'm Radical Russ everywhere. Radical Russ at Gmail, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, SoundCloud, YouTube, Ustream, Periscope, Skype, LinkedIn, Google+. I'm Radical Russ everywhere. You can't miss me. That's all the time we got for today. Coming up next, Stoner Jesus is taking over on CannabisRadio.com. We'll be back tomorrow with more news and interviews you can use for the cannabis community. Coming to you live and direct from beautiful, legal Potland, Oregon. I'm Radical Russ. For everyone here at Cannabis Radio, thanks for joining us. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.
Avenue in Southeast Portland. Anthony Johnson will be there. Anthony Johnson was the chief petitioner of Measure 91, a transplant from the red state of Missouri. He'll make his historic first purchase there. And a big thanks to Matt Price, a longtime supporter of marijuana reform, the owner of Cannabis, who will be hosting
Anthony Johnson. Sid Maurer, she'll be making her first legal purchase at the Greener Side, a dispensary at 1553 Oak Street in Eugene, Oregon.